Hello, and welcome to our CCAS research webinar, Inquiring Minds, Mending Tiny Hearts. I'm Jennifer Lynch. This episode is part of a six-part series drawn from our December 2024 CCAS research webinar, highlighting conversations with leaders in pediatric cardiac anesthesiology. In this segment, Dr. Phil Adams joins me to explore how quality improvement initiatives can be transformed into meaningful academic work. We discuss how to identify valuable QI topics, structure projects for scholarly impact, and use QI as a platform for research
One
engagement.
second. Dr. Phil Adams, currently an associate professor of anesthesiology and perioperative medicine at the University of Pittsburgh, and a pediatric cardiac and transplant anesthesiologist at UPMC at Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh. Dr. Adams completed his anesthesia training and fellowships, including an NIH T32 postdoctoral research training program at UPMC. He's an active member of the Society of Education in Anesthesia Research Committee and associate editor for the Journal of Education and Perioperative Medicine. He serves on the CCAS Patient Safety and Quality Improvement Committee and will speak to us today about developing and implementing QI projects. Thank you again for joining us.
Yeah, great to see you again, Dr. Lynch.
Yes, you too. All right, diving right in. So we're talking about
Yeah.
QI projects. So what is a QI project and how is this different from maybe traditional clinical research?
Yeah, this is kind of like a 90-degree turn, almost in a sense, from everything we've heard so far. All these amazing investigators talking about their research, whereas QI is not that. So, we're kind of standing on the shoulders of the researchers to implement all the information found. So yeah, QI is more process improvement. It's finding a gap in care and working toward closing that gap. Whereas clinical research can be more thought of as adding new knowledge, finding something new discoveries from what was previously known. So I think those are kind of defining features.
Do you have like certain criteria that needs to be met to be able to call something a QI initiative?
I think, mainly with QI, you again begin by identifying a problem, or again, like a gap in performance. And then going from there, you dive into the literature, see what the research has shown for best outcomes. And then I think one of the kind of defining features is when you're creating your plan, it's something that you're going to apply to everybody. If you start to get into the world of, well, let's apply this plan to group A, and we're not going to apply it to group B, and then we're going to compare their outcomes. You're starting to like merge away from what true QI is and closer to the research world. So yeah, finding that gap, that identifying a problem, coming up with ways from the literature to improve it, and then applying that to everybody, and then following for outcomes to see if you're moving the needle.
Sort of a follow-up question to that. So it's my understanding of QI is that it needs to be prospective. So you'll make a change and then you'll see how things change. Is that true, or are there any retrospective QI studies that can be done? Like if a change happened in the past, can you look back at, and see how that change affected things?
I think looking back retrospectively can help guide you, but the fun thing, we heard early on about the arduous nature of RCTs, right? But one of the fun things about QI is it's so plastic. It can change as it goes. It should change as you go. For those who haven't seen it, there's this idea of plan, do, study, act, and it's drawn in a circle specifically. So you can go retrospectively to kind of see how things looked and different processes that might have affected outcomes. But you're always going to be moving toward the future and how you're changing things. You're collecting data and seeing how closely you're approaching whatever goal, predetermined goal you've set, and then reassessing again and then reassessing again. So yeah, to a degree, definitely able to incorporate it, but it's very future thinking, forward thinking.
And then when you're doing a QI project, do you need to get institution approval? Like for a research project, you would get IRB approval. How does that work if you're going to do a QI initiative?
So the good thing is that QI is not research. So, and when you can talk about IRB, it is again institutional review. So it's going to vary, by institution to institution. At least for us, we have a nice little algorithm. As soon as you log into our IRB and start clicking through boxes, if what you are describing is a QI project, it bumps you out. It says, it like little stars and banners shoot out. Yay, this is not, you don't have to continue on with this. Gigantic IRB process. However, there are approval processes, and you should look into your institution because there's still should be some oversight, a little bit of regulation. We want to be sure that everything's being done ethically. So, yeah, there's not a formal IRB for true QI projects. you might still have to present it to the IRB for them to make that determination. And then they'll probably steer you toward the kind of QI review committee.
And once you've identified your question, that what else do you need to identify? How do you form a QI project? What are the different steps?
Right. So you've identified your clinical problem, your the process that you want to improve. And I think the next best thing is to really the idea of the SMART goals, right? So I think everything really needs to be specific because nebulous things don't really gain much traction. So saying, well, let's make this better. No one can quantify better. We don't know how to measure better or higher or less. But when we say we want a 20% reduction within a 6-month time period, now we really have something to work off of. So I always go with the SMART goals: specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-based. I think another great idea, and especially, we're all here talking about the potential of, advancing our academic careers, can be a little more difficult to publish in, QI projects. It's not impossible. And if you look at the Equator Network for just about any sort of publication, there's guidelines for publishing. The Squire guidelines are for publishing QI. I think it's a great template. From the get-go, sit down with those and look what's required for those guidelines for publication. It really helps to guide you as you begin to build it. Then you kind of move on, again, specific and systematic, I think, are the best ways. You've identified your problem. You've developed your aims or goals. Look into cause and effect. This is kind of that classic fishbone diagram. It's just one of the ways, but again, one that I really like. And when we sit down as a group, really systematic cause and effect will help you develop your processes that you're going to implement to work toward whatever goal you've set.
When I hear about QI projects, I always hear this word stakeholder. So like, what are the stakeholders? How do you identify them? How do you keep them interested? What's been your experience? You could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think really anyone it's going to affect, right? And primarily it's going to be patient oriented and we want to improve our patient outcomes. But let's just even say us as the anesthesia group, we're going to create a QI project. Well, all of the different processes that we hope to implement might affect the surgeons, might affect our circulating nurses, scrub techs, could affect the ICU, could affect the respiratory therapists. So it is a good idea, again, right from the get-go, before you jump into your project as you're designing it, to consider that. That's even a part of that fishbone diagram, is to think about the people, the environment. But yeah, people are definitely going to be important. You leave somebody out and you try to implement a project, they're not going to know what's going on. It might be more difficult to get buy-in. So again, a great thing to do right up front from the beginning.
Can you talk a little bit about what projects you've done so far and what your experience has been with QI projects?
Yeah. So kind of one of the first things, and a lot of this is just born out of, your water cooler talk sometimes, not always, but we felt like we were doing a great job, especially with our neonates, kind of keeping them euthermic in the operating room. We know we want to avoid hyperthermia, certainly, but, and then the cold walk down the hallway, get to the ICU, you have these ice cold babies. And so one of the first projects that we were happy with was creating this kind of bundled package for neonatal euthermia and infant euthermia after our cases. We did a project with TEE. There's evidence that when you might do a perfect job of getting your endotracheal cuff perfect pressure, and then you place a TEE probe in adults, we know pressures go up. And we were curious if that was the same in children. And so we created a project where we were continuously checking the endotracheal tube cuff pressures after the TEE probe went in. And, it's always fun what you find. And like I said, that's why it's such a plastic process, that those pressures really don't change much in the smaller kids until those rings. I'm getting off topic. But anyway, you start to find things that you didn't even realize were going to be impactful. And then now we've been really focusing on kind of creating a bundle for our Fontan patients, just looking at ways to maybe reduce chest tube outputs, which is then, kind of length of stay things. So developing a bundle based on evidence and implementing that bundle and seeing if we can help those Fontan kids out.
It seems like some of those questions we can also approach from a research lens. So how would you suggest, institutions think about ways to do this synergistically with the QI projects and your research, kind of helping each other instead of competing interests?
Right. And that it's difficult at times because You know, just like research, I think anyone would agree that as soon as you, you know, quote, finish a research project, what you end up with is 10 more questions, right? And so it's the same in QI. You implement your QI project, but then you're finding these new things and you're actually developing hypotheses as you're going through it. So I think they're all little spinoffs, and you're right, it can be synergistic. And so, you know, one person can only do so much, but if you have interested parties, then you say, hey, we've been working on this process improvement for the last 6 months now. Here's one of the things we've identified. Why don't we send this through IRB and investigate it, you know, on its own?
Okay. And I think we have time for like one or two more questions that I really want to hear from you. This might be institution specific, but where are the future QI initiatives? What should we be focusing on for our QI projects?
That's a great question. I think, you know, we've heard there's so many of these big databases available now. And so we're getting a lot of this, you know, national benchmarking. And so I think that each individual institution can kind of look at that and ask themselves, where are we at here? You don't always have to reinvent the wheel. If you notice that you're slightly behind in one metric or another, you're more than welcome to kind of implement a project, or you can even reach out to some other institutions and say, you know, hey, how have you approached this? How have you overcome this? Are you seeing improvement since you've done it? And then that way it can save you some time. Or you might come to find that we're all struggling with the same problems, and then you can kind of even collaborate. There's no reason things can't be multi-institutional either. So I think, you know, the question, you know, a little deeper into that is, you know, besides the benchmarking, what do we look at? Even within our patient safety committee at CCAS, you know, we always wonder what exactly is it that anesthesiologists like truly affect in the perioperative period. We know certainly a lot of things intraoperatively, but things like AKI, you know, reintubations even, you know, we might do a good job of getting patients extubated, but we don't know once they're out of our care, things that are happening, which is why, again, I think that you mentioned earlier, the stakeholders make a collaborative, you know, an anesthesia QI project's great, but include the CT surgeons, include the cardiac ICU. And then that way you're going to get a much more uniform plan with all those people invested in it.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Dr. Adams. This has been a great discussion.